Hello, everybody. I'm Monique Chapman, your host, and thank you for joining us for an hour of personal and metaphysical growth. Each week, Walking with Spirit explores different topics from the mundane to the mystical with stimulating guests from all over the world who share their knowledge to uplift consciousness. Tonight, we have Dr. Carolyn Miller with us, and she is the author of Creating Miracles. If you'd like to speak with us and ask a psychic question or share a miracle you have witnessed, the phone lines are open. The numbers are toll-free, 1-888-268-4313 or 530-876-3222. Again, 888-268-4313 or 530-876-3222. We also encourage you to email your questions to spiritanswers@walkingwithspirit.net, and your questions will be answered in real time on the air. Now, we've got a great opportunity for you tonight. Carolyn has gifted us with copies of her new book, Creating Miracles, and for the first five people who call in and ask us a question, you'll get a free copy of her book. All you have to do is give our producer your name and your address when you call in, and we'll get that book right out to you. Now, a bit about me for our new listeners. I'm an intuitive energy therapist with 25 years' experience. I have helped thousands of people from stay-at-home parents to corporate executives make their invisible dreams visible. Utilizing my gifts, I tap into the past, present, and future, eliminating the fog and paving the way for clarity. I work with Eastern, Western, African, and Caribbean methodologies, in addition to being a board-certified hypnotherapist, Reiki master, and ordained minister. If you'd like more information about me, you can always check out my website, www.healing-visions.com. Now, Carolyn Miller holds a Ph.D. in experimental psychology and has taught at both graduate and undergraduate levels for more than 20 years. As a researcher, she has trained psychologists in scientific methodology, and she has authored numerous professional articles. She and her husband, Arnold Weiss, are founding directors of the Los Angeles-based Foundation and Institute for the Study of A Course in Miracles. She is also the author of Soulmates, Following Inner Guidance in the Relationship of Your Dreams. Carolyn lives in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to Walking with Spirit, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you, Monica.
I am so excited to have you on the show tonight. But tell me something. How does someone with such a scientific background switch over to A Course in Miracles and then Creating Miracles?
Well, I think I'd always had an interest in metaphysical subjects. And about the time I began reading A Course in Miracles, a series of odd things occurred that put me on this track. Basically, the first thing was that I was driving alone in the mountains up above Los Angeles. I'd gone up to see the snow. We don't get a lot of that down here.
Uh-huh.
And my car had a blowout going over some black ice and skidded out of control, skidded across the other lane of traffic, and was on a trajectory that was going to take it over the cliff.
Oh.
And what happened at that moment is that I went into a very strange altered state of consciousness where I felt completely peaceful, even though I realized that I must be about to die. I had time for lots of thoughts and reactions in that state. And ultimately, an inner voice came through and sort of directed me in driving my car in exactly the right way to turn away from, you know, get out of the skid and turn away from the cliff at the very last moment.
Uh-huh.
And I think the most remarkable thing to me about the whole experience was that I was completely at peace throughout.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You said that, you know, you had a lot of time to think and, you know, a lot of things came to you, but we're literally talking about seconds here, aren't we?
Probably only 1 second. I've actually done the math.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So, I mean, it was really a remarkable thing. And what happened the next week was I mentioned it to my friend and spiritual teacher, Carmela Corallo.
Uh-huh.
And she said, well, you know, it's funny. The same thing happened to me last week. And what had happened to her was she had been climbing on some bluffs near her home. And these are very unstable bluffs over the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And the path fell away in front of her and behind her. and she realized that it wasn't going to be staying under her very long either. So she, too, went into this very peaceful, almost humorous, whimsical state of consciousness and felt guided in climbing straight up the bluff, although she's, you know, was at that time a woman in her 40s and not particularly athletic.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, she was completely calm, completely focused on what she was doing, and, you know, this attitude that, oh, this is a piece of cake. And so that was so striking, that coincidence, that I mentioned it to one of my graduate psychology classes. And a woman came up afterward and said, well, you know, Carolyn, it would have been all right even if you'd gone off the cliff. That's what happened to me and my boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
And so so she told me about the two of them driving at night in the Rocky Mountains, and her boyfriend drove straight over the edge of a cliff. They're plunging through the air.
Uh-huh.
She said both of them went into that same whimsical, altered state of consciousness where, you know, they fully expected to die, but they also knew everything was going to be just fine.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was that they splashed down in a beaver pond.
Oh,
just
okay.
Deep enough to break their fall.
Uh-huh.
And they ultimately climbed out onto the roof, and they sang songs until a motorist came and noticed their skid marks and went for help. The car was towed out completely unharmed, started right out. And the kicker was that all of the local people who gathered at the spot said that they passed this place every day and no one had ever seen a beaver pond there before.
Oh, well, that was really interesting and quite a miracle. Now, do you feel that the angels helped with this? When you go into this altered state, what is it that, or who is it that you feel is with you?
Well, I know that people around the world have different ideas about this, and I don't want to push my ideas.
No, you're here to express whatever. It's okay.
But what I think is that we have awakened, shall we say, brothers and sisters who are fully enlightened beings who never went into a state of illusion,
mm-hmm.
and that different ones of them work with each of us throughout our lives and are available to us always in our own minds whenever we're willing to accept their guidance. And I think probably everybody has had experiences of having an uplifting conversation with an inner voice that seemed very wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what accounts for it, and that in meditation we learn to turn to that inner voice and to receive guidance much more directly.
Mm-hmm. But when we're, you know, going on with everyday life and all of a sudden we find ourselves in peril, and if we didn't happen to tune into that automatically, is there any way that we can adjust our energy to tune into that energy to save ourselves?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's a shift in consciousness. It's a momentary pulling away from your investment in the way you're interpreting a situation and being open to a different kind of possibility.
Uh-huh.
And I think that gives our guides and perhaps our angels permission to intervene, because, you know, we have free will, and I don't think that a supernatural force is going to intervene in our lives as long as we are determined to handle a situation ourselves.
Okay, that's interesting. You know, about 25 years ago, my sister and I were driving someplace that was extremely foggy, and it was late at night and couldn't see, and there weren't any other cars on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to a part where I knew that we were going to go down a hill. And, you know, I just told her, I said, I am so nervous because I can't see. I mean, literally zero visibility. All of a sudden, a car flew down in front of us. Okay, red lights, you know, in the back, flashing, had the flashers going, and it drove us all the way home. Once we got home, the car literally flew away. Now, I tell people this story, and they're like, yeah, right.
Well,
so if you could play along with me and believe this story, would that be me asking someone to come in?
I think it really is, yeah. I mean, you know, in a sense, you were saying, I can't handle this on my own. You know, mm-hmm. I know how far I can see, and I know I can't see that road.
Well, you know, it's interesting because right before the car flew in, I was sharing with my sister. I said, do you remember when Daddy took us down, you know, wherever we were going, and it was really foggy, and he couldn't see? And my father had crossed over, you know, at that point, and we both believe that Daddy came to save us.
Uh-huh. Well, it might well have been. Certainly, you opened yourself up to help from another level,
mm-hmm.
whether it was your own guides or an angel or the spirit of your father, that I don't know, but I think it's terrific.
Okay, so you really don't have to be conscious on some level that you're creating your miracle.
Well, it's, yeah, I'm not sure what to say about that. There's a definite shift in consciousness that people go through.
Mm-hmm.
Before it happens. And a person who has trained themselves to know that will instantly recognize when they're out of their depths and go into that state. But I think other people who perhaps have practiced some sort of meditation or have a spiritual orientation are more likely to sort of pull back and either ask God for help or say a quick prayer or even just in recognizing that they can't handle this themselves, open the way for help to come to them.
Oh, okay. Well, let's back up a little bit. Your book is entitled Creating Miracles. Exactly what do you consider a miracle to be?
Well, I start out with the definition, which I think is a fairly common one. That a miracle is an instance where a supernatural power interferes in the natural world. Now, that's a good definition in the sense that it covers what we mean when we talk about miracles.
Mm-hmm.
But from the point of view of a scientist, there's no way to operationalize it.
Right.
You know, you can't very well figure out what you would have to do to perform an experiment to see if that really happened. And part of that is, how do you know that a supernatural power interfered? You know, there are so many circumstances where extraordinary things happen, and then, you know, science advances and we come to understand that there was actually a perfectly ordinary explanation for that. So the definition that I move on to really is the one that's given in the Course in Miracles, that a miracle is a shift in perspective. Because I find from all of the people who tell me these stories that there is a shift away from fear, away from anger, away from efforting to handle a situation on their own, and a settling back into a place of peace and receptivity, where people do what they're inspired to do, whether they're told by a voice or it comes to them in some other way. So the Course says that the actual miracle is that shift into inner peace, into a state of miracle-mindedness. Now, when you do that, it's very often the case that something that people call a miracle happens around you, like a beaver pond appearing underneath your car,
mm-hmm.
Or a disease being healed, or, you know, being saved from a terrorist who's determined to kill you. But those things, in a sense, are collateral. The main thing is really that shift into a state of unshakable inner peace that seems to characterize it.
Now, do you have to have any particular belief system in order for these miracles to come in, or can anybody manifest these miracles?
I'm convinced that anybody really can. I don't think it's even necessary to believe in God or have religious beliefs or any particular religious beliefs. You know, we're all human beings, and I do believe that there is a supernatural power in the universe that loves us and that wants to help us, and we're all equally able to call upon that power. In fact, when we just open the door slightly by releasing our grip on fear or resentment or anger, and we stop trying to handle the situation ourselves, then that help flows through us very naturally. And I think it really empowers our guides to act on our behalf.
Okay. Well, you know, you've said several times now, you know, stop trying to handle it by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
How do we truly engage with the other energies to have them assist us? And will they? Because we ask.
Yes, I believe that they will. I think, you know, if you think about 12-step programs, for instance, the first step is to admit that you're powerless.
Uh-huh.
And then the second step is to really entertain the hope that there is some other power that could help you.
Okay.
And that seems to me to parallel what I've found in the stories people tell me about their miracles. I think if you want to handle a situation yourself at the level of your ego, if you want to define it for yourself, you know, that so-and-so is doing this to me, and then decide on your own what to do about that, of course, you're free to do that, and we see the results of that all around us in the world all the time.
Uh-huh.
But when people go into that place of letting go, they're often shown a different way to view the situation that suddenly makes a different way of behaving seem more sensible. And often it's a loving way of behaving. Let me tell you a story about a woman who was attacked in her home by Arab terrorists.
Okay.
And they tied her up and threw her down in the bed. They demanded that she open the safe for them. She explained that she didn't know the combination, only her husband did. So they told her that they would wait for her husband to come home, make him open the safe with the threat that they would kill her otherwise, and then kill both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So for several hours, while one of them ransacked their house, the other one sat with an automatic weapon to her head. And she found herself going into this, again, amazing, peaceful state of consciousness. And she said to me that she knew it was an altered state because she had just had her nails done and she was racing to get home to use the bathroom because when you get your nails done, you can't...
Yeah, it's a little difficult.
It's a little difficult. So when she ran into the house, she was very uncomfortable with her bladder and she was tackled by these guys and dragged into the bedroom and tied up for hours. And she said she never had the slightest feeling of discomfort from that.
Boy, that's interesting because I think I would have let go.
I would think that. But she went into this altered state where she felt such love and compassion for these people who she did not doubt would kill her.
Mm-hmm.
She got the one who was holding her at gunpoint talking, and he began to really open up and, you know, talk about his grievances against the Jews. She happened to be Jewish. That's why they were attacking this particular house. And she found that it just made her heart ache with compassion for the horrible lives these men had led and the terrible fear that had driven them to behave in these ways.
Uh-huh.
And she was just there trying to comfort this man who was about to kill her. And what finally happened was the other man came down, wanted to rape her, and the man who had been talking with her refused, and they had a big argument. Her husband ultimately came home. They did force him to open the safe and tied him up on the bed beside her. And the terrorist she had been talking to said, "Do you love your wife?" And her husband said, "Yes." And the terrorist said, "Tell her so now." And so he said, "I love you, Deborah." And they both thought that those would be the last words they would ever hear on earth.
Uh-huh.
And instead, these terrorists just stole away.
Wow.
And when it was reported to the police were able to identify who the people were through their MO and said they had never left a witness alive at a crime scene before.
Huh.
So this was really a first.
Yeah. And she truly created a miracle in that instance.
I believe so, yes.
Right. Well, we're listening to Walking with Spirit. I am interviewing Dr. Carolyn Miller. She's the author of Creating Miracles. The phone lines are open. The numbers are 888-268-4313 or 530-876-3222. Carolyn, I want to, you mentioned a couple of things, and I want to kind of go back to that. You had talked about, you know, we need to be able to let go of the fear, the anger, and the resentment. Could you help us with that? Give us some tips? No, seriously, because so many people, you know, I think they really want to let go, but they don't have a clue to where to begin.
You know, I think, in fact, that it's sometimes easier to do that in an emergency than it is in an ongoing situation like a family conflict. You know, in those moments of emergency where you're in the presence of your own death, it sort of jerks you awake in a hurry and makes your consciousness expand, or at least it can do that. And I, you know, I'm a psychotherapist myself. I really do understand that it's not a simple thing for people to give up their anger, their resentment, or the fear that they're feeling, which by most standards would be realistic, certainly in the situation we're talking about here.
Well, that little, not to cut you off, but I am, you have a little caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, and your name?
Lamont.
Hi, Lamont. Do you have a question for us?
No, not actually a question. I was listening to your commentary on the radio and on the internet, actually, and I was just thinking about the miracle that happened to me.
Oh, would you share that with us?
Sure. I was about 15, 16 years old. And, I was about 15, 16 years old. And I was sitting down in an elevator, a freight car. I just, you know, as a kid, young kid, I was just wondering how it would feel to sit down in between the floors of an elevator. Everybody went for lunch, and my brother was upstairs, and this freight car, they was taking cars up and down. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, my brother's got antsy, he wanted the elevator, and I'm sitting down in between the floors, and he pulled the rope, it's an old elevator, and the elevator started to go up. The next thing I knew, I was looking at my legs, and I said, oh no, it's going to be chopped off. And I said, I can't move it because the wall is right down upon my legs, like a scissor. And all of a sudden, I just closed my eyes, and the elevator started to move backwards. And as it moved backwards, I could hear the floor or the ground of the elevator start cracking and snapping and all kind of things was going on. I thought the bottom of the elevator would drop out. And all of a sudden, the elevator stopped. And then the rescuers came, the fire department came and everything, and they put wedges in between the wall and the elevator to move the elevator back. And then they got me out. They said, how come you didn't lose your legs?
Now, the next thing I knew,
I was in the hospital, and they said that the motor burnt out, which you say was impossible. This thing lifts up cars and everything all day long, and how could your legs burn out this elevator?
Burnt out just in the nick of time. Now, did you have any altered state of consciousness?
No, I just said, well, here it goes, and I just closed my eyes, and like when I opened up, the elevator had stopped, and the wood stopped breaking, and that was it. I mean,
but you know, that may have been.
I didn't even cut my leg. My legs wasn't even cut or anything.
When people have that sort of letting go of, you know, well, here it comes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a letting go. That is a freeing of the consciousness that is very different from terror.
Yeah.
And so I think you really did have a miracle. And I'm very glad you did.
The elevator was out for months.
well, don't do that to too many elevators, okay?
Yeah, no. Well, that was when I was a little kid.
Hi, Wilma. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing your story with us today. If you'd like a copy of Carolyn's book, Creating Miracles, please give your name and address to the producer, and we'll get that out to you this week, okay?
Oh, thank you.
Okay, thank you for calling in.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. You know, Carolyn's interesting. You know, he went through that, and, you know, the feeling, I think that you're feeling is that, you know, yes, he did have an altered state and wasn't necessarily aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have miracles that maybe occur in our lives every day that we're not aware of?
Oh, I'm sure that we
are. And I know that sounds weird, because you think a miracle is something massive.
I don't think it sounds weird at all. The argument I try to make in the book is, most people who investigate miracles try to look at things that would be impossible in the absence of a miracle.
Uh-huh.
You know, raising a dead person who is really well and truly dead.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm suggesting is that miracles can also be found in outcomes that are improbable, that are highly unlikely. Now, in his case, for instance, okay, the motor burned out. How likely is it that motor would happen to burn out just at that moment,
uh-huh,
or in response to the resistance that could be offered by his legs at that moment? And the truth is, I think probably there are small miracles happening around us all the time, and instead of recognizing them as such, we just think, oh, that was really lucky, or, oh, you know, I must have played that really the right way to have that turn out so well. But, you know, this is a whole continuum. I believe that our guides are with us to help us all the time, constantly organizing meetings with people that can work to our benefit, bringing information to us that we badly need, bringing people to our rescue when we need help of any kind. I think these things go on all the time.
Well, you mentioned something earlier about meditation and, you know, people meditating. Does one have to be a serious... Well, I'm getting a lot of feedback in the back. I don't know where that's coming from, but perhaps it could be quiet. Thank you. There's a lot of... you mentioned people meditating. When one meditates, does that bring them closer to miracles than, say, someone who doesn't meditate or pray?
Absolutely. Let me say personally that I think that everybody meditates.
Uh-huh.
In our society, we make kind of a big deal about meditation.
I called in and talked about miracles. I was telling what happened with my leg. I was stuck in the elevator.
Work at it for 20 years or something before you would achieve some great mystical state of consciousness.
Uh-huh.
I think the truth is that people, you know, they may call it zoning out, but we do it throughout the day. You know, anybody who's ever sort of sat staring into the middle distance with their mind kind of empty and open and not working over thoughts is doing some form of meditation.
Uh-huh.
And just being in a state like that makes it easier for your guides to get through to you with good advice. Often in those states, people think of the solution to a problem that they hadn't been able to figure out on their own.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's the input of our guides. But, you know, one of the stories that I talk about in the book was of a woman who was told by a psychic if she didn't learn to meditate, she was going to die.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a bit harsh, but okay.
Yes, but she took it seriously, and she joined a meditation class, and, you know, she had been at this for a few months. And here's what happened. She was a woman in about her early 20s at the time, and she had been dating a man. She knew he had been in prison. She didn't really know for what.
Uh-huh.
She was, you know, figured he'd paid his debt to society. It was none of her business. And after a period of time, he began to seem to go into psychotic states. And one day at his house, he announced he was going to kill her.
Oh.
And he bashed her in the head with his fist, knocked her to the ground, sat down on top of her, pushed a pillow against her face, and started beating her in the head with his other hand.
Uh-huh.
And she, you know, was quickly hovering on the edge of consciousness. And she realized, okay, this must be the time I'm supposed to go into meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So she did. And she said that when she did, she instantly became completely peaceful, but it was like her body was taken over by something else. And her body began to fight back furiously, so furiously that this petite woman, you know, beat this guy up so bad that he got off her and actually backed off and told her that he was afraid she would have beaten him to death. I mean, that's how ferocious her attack was.
Oh, jeez.
So she crawled out a bathroom window and got away from him, went to the police, learned that he had been convicted for beating another woman to death, and was suspected of having done this to quite a number of women.
Uh-huh.
The police couldn't find him, and he began stalking her. And he finally cornered her in an alley and was sort of, you know, coming up to her. And her meditation teacher had taught them a technique for raising protective energy by raising the cupped right hand in front of the body like a shield,
uh-huh.
and asking for help. And she did that, and this man leaped at her, and she said it was as though an invisible fist grabbed him in midair and threw him aside. The trajectory of his leap just changed in midair, and he went flying. And she said he got up, and he looked absolutely terrified and ran away, and she never saw him again. but that was a case where, you know, she learned to meditate, and it did save her life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess there's a couple of lessons in there. Number one, meditation can definitely save your life. And number two, if you're going to interact with someone who's been in prison, at least ask why. It doesn't mean that you have to disengage, but ask why.
Yeah, so I think she looks back with a little embarrassment on that.
Yeah.
She gets to look back.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we all get our lessons in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, for her to go to the psychic and the psychic to say, you know, do this, and then for her to go through that experience
mm-hmm.
and, you know, utilize the tools that she had been taught, she now knows that this works for her.
Exactly.
You know, and that it can work and it can protect. But what do you say to the person who says, oh, I can't meditate, my mind never gets quiet?
You know, all I can say is try. I mean, I said that for most of my life. And the, you know, the truth is, you at some point you reach a point where you're determined enough that you're not going to take no for an answer.
Uh-huh.
And if you stick it out past that point, I think those people will find it working and working very well and working very quickly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can imagine that the woman I was just speaking of, she'd been a meditation student for only a few months at that point. It's not like she was the Dalai Lama or something.
Uh-huh.
So it has a lot to do with determination and commitment.
Okay. So, well, we are speaking with Carolyn Miller. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to speak with us, give us a call at 888-268-4313 or 530-876-3222. You can also email your questions to spiritanswers@walkingwithspirit.net, and we'll answer your question in real time on the air. Carolyn, your book, Creating Miracles, available everywhere?
Everywhere.
Okay. Oh, Amazon, your neighborhood bookstore, the major chains, if they don't have it in stock, please ask them to order it. It's recently released. It just came out in March. So it's a month old, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a growing baby. So we expect great things from that. It is a pretty easy read. I went through my copy rather quickly. So I think that you folks would enjoy it. She gives a lot of techniques and tips on how to create your own miracles in your life. And speaking of that, what can the layperson do, the everyday Joe, do to create miracles in their life?
Well, I think, first of all, just remember that miracles are possible. And in remembering that, I think one almost automatically reaches for them, really authorizes one's inner guide to help. And it doesn't have to be in a big, hairy, life or death situation of the sort that I usually write about, but, you know, just in your everyday life when you're trying to solve a problem, or perhaps you have a relationship difficulty, or you're not getting along with your boss, or you know, any of the ordinary problems that we all have in our lives.
Uh-huh.
If instead of just plodding along in the same way one usually does, if we kind of clear our mind, entertain the possibility that nobody's guilty here, it's not your fault, it's not your boss's fault, you know, it's a misunderstanding, and really reach into the deepest part of your mind for a way of looking at the problem that affirms the innocence of everybody involved,
uh-huh.
and a solution that's going to work for everybody.
Okay. You mentioned earlier the word guides, and you said inner guides. What's the difference between inner guides and, say, spirit guides, ascended masters, and everybody that's external?
Well, I think the trick is that nobody's external.
Uh-huh.
I think ultimately, you know, what both physicists and spiritual adepts from around the world seem to agree on is that space and time are ultimately illusions. They're not real. And that what seems to be physical reality is actually an illusion being generated within our own minds.
Uh-huh.
And that minds are linked with other minds. So there's a sense in which our mind can reach out to and contact the mind of anybody else in the universe, living or dead.
Uh-huh.
Or if you're not dead, that's the point. Everybody is living. And we may be moving in different, I don't know if it's even appropriate to say dimensions.
Yeah, I think dimensions would...
We're living in an illusion here in what seems to be a physical space-time world.
Uh-huh.
But awakened beings are living in the expanded consciousness that allows them to be present with anyone, anywhere, at any time.
Okay.
And that means that each of us is free to call upon them. Now, I think some of us have, not some of us, all of us really, are assigned particular awakened beings, one or more, who really serve as our personal tutors and are present with us, always in our consciousness. They know what's going on in our hearts and in our minds. They know what's best for us,
uh-huh.
in a sense, in a way that we don't know when we're focused at the level of the ego. And so soliciting their help is the easiest imaginable way,
okay.
to smooth your way through any difficulties that you're facing. You know, in my earlier book, Soulmates, I talk about using inner guidance to find a wonderful love relationship.
Uh-huh.
And that book is full of stories of people who reached to their inner guidance and were directed perhaps to somebody they might not have considered before, simply because that person wasn't their type.
Uh-huh.
And ultimately developed a wonderful soulmate relationship with that person.
Uh-huh.
Now, at the level of their ego, you know, they wouldn't ever have gone out with that person.
Yeah. So I think it shows that we generally don't have a type. It's just about being open to the energy people that are around us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, you and your husband, Arnold, you're the founding directors of the Los Angeles Foundation and Institute for the Study of the Course in Miracles. I remember about, oh, goodness, 20 years ago, maybe longer, I was reading that wonderful book, Course in Miracles.
Yeah.
That's not an easy read. It set the tone of self-reflection and introspection, which was really good for me.
Yeah.
Tell me about what the work that you folks do.
Well, we basically do classes, study group type classes that where we go through A Course in Miracles and help people understand what it's saying.
Uh-huh.
Both of us are also psychotherapists, and there's a pamphlet on psychotherapy that accompanies A Course in Miracles and is channeled from Jesus as well. And we try to do psychotherapy according to that model, which has a lot to do with allowing your inner guide to direct you in how to help somebody.
Okay. So, And what can you share with us from the work that you do? What can you impart to our listening audience from the work that you do that could, I think, maybe help uplift someone right now who's kind of low? You know, with all of the rain that's going on in the different parts of the country and even different parts of the world and the bad weather and all, I think people's energy is a little bit low.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what could you share with us to kind of help bring us up?
Well, I can share one of the stories that I have in Creating Miracles.
Okay.
Which is, I had been working with a woman who was, she was manic depressive, she was a recovering alcoholic. Her children had been taken away because of the rather savage abuse she had inflicted on them in psychotic states. She's a very disturbed person. And I had been running a program for hospitalized women patients in the hospital, and once she left the hospital, she was seeing me on an outpatient basis. So I was at home one Sunday afternoon, and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was her.
Uh-huh.
And she was screaming at me that she was going to kill me and then kill herself, and all her problems were my fault because I was her therapist and I hadn't taken them all away.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, she was really in a very dangerous psychotic state, and I knew that she was not calling from home because I knew her phone had been taken out for non-payment of the bill, and I knew she wasn't going to tell me where she was because she was very paranoid at that point.
Uh-huh.
So I felt like, well, what can I do? I couldn't even get a word in edgewise, frankly. So I sort of again recognized my helplessness in this situation, and I said, God, this is your client. I think you better do something about this, because I sure as hell don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to go into meditation, and she's still screaming in my ear. And I'll tell you, my experience was, the next thing that happened is I came to, and I realized that I had been watching the movie Conan the Barbarian on the television.
Okay.
With a sense of complete fascination. And for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
Apparently I had flipped the TV to a station playing that movie before I picked up the phone. And somehow it had happened that I had completely lost track of the phone conversation. And I had been watching this movie.
Oh.
So I was horrified at myself, and I kind of jerked back to the phone, and then I was more horrified to find that there was a strange voice talking in my living room. And still more astonished to find out that it was actually not a strange voice, it was my voice talking. And at this point, this voice was giving my client a very sensible explanation of what had upset her so much and what she should do about it. And she came back on the line, and she was completely calm at that point, saying, like, yeah, I bet that's it, Carolyn. I bet that's really what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the voice gave her some further suggestions for getting through until our next therapy session. And she thanked me very profusely and apologized, you know, for all the terrible things she'd said to me earlier.
Uh-huh.
And hung up, still thinking that that was me talking to her. And I've always felt that I must have missed out on some of the most masterful therapy in the world by zoning out in that way. Because obviously, you know, some guide had come through and talked her through that.
Uh-huh.
Awful situation, and I couldn't even imagine how it had been done.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it comes when we need it, and, you know, sometimes we have to go into that altered state. So you went into the movie so the God could come through.
Right.
I'll have to try that.
Movie therapy.
Yeah, there you go, movie therapy. And when someone's out there asking this, I'm going to bring it up. There's some people out there who like to take shortcuts to get any and everything. And that's okay. I mean, if that's who you are, that's who you are. Because we're all growing at different rates. Could someone use the process of creating miracles in your book to gain monetarily?
That's a very good question. You know, as you're aware, and I'm sure your listeners are too, there's quite a large and enthusiastic movement in positive thinking.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, training people to focus on their goals, you know, get their intentions behind it, and they talk about manifesting wealth and relationships and whatever else you want in your life. And I think it's important to realize that miracles are different from that. You know, I think that can work for people, and I think there are a lot of people for whom it does work. But when you're doing that, it's always your ego that's deciding what it is you ought to have.
Uh-huh.
And it's always coming from a sense of deprivation. Like, you know, I would be all right if only I got that job, or if only I made so much money, or I could buy that house, or, you know, win that husband, or whatever it is. Miracles are quite different from that. In a miracle-minded state, you release all of your expectations, and you're really available to let God's will be done.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you're even thinking that that might mean that it will be God's will that you die right now. And even that's okay in that state. So it's positive thinking is essentially a very willful affair.
Uh-huh.
Of people trying to mobilize their self-will to bend the universe so that they get what they want. And of course, you know, it's a zero-sum game, so
yeah.
What one person gets, you know, is taken from another, in a sense. But when you release yourself to miracles, I think sometimes you do find wonderful things happening in your life. But at the level of spirit, I don't believe that material possessions are what our lives are all about.
Okay.
And I think our guides would like to wean us away from the idea that we need money or power or status in order to be all right.
Going back to who we truly are.
Yeah. And realizing that God does care for us, and that we can relax into that care. And that when we do that, what is truly best is what will happen.
Uh-huh.
Although it might not be what our ego would have expected.
Okay. You know, most of the miracles that we talked about this evening has been around the threat of immediate danger.
Yeah.
How can we test that if we aren't in any danger? You know, I plan on being danger-free.
I think it can be tested in the most trivial circumstances of our lives. You know, we all have problems. And we all have habitual ways of dealing with those problems, you know, which might have to do with worrying about them, might have to do with being angry over them, feeling small in the face of them, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And if instead of doing that, a person decides to turn within for help and to relax as much as you can, and I understand that it's not always easy to feel like you're achieving great things in meditation.
Uh-huh.
But simply the change of direction that's implied by saying, God, I don't know the answer to this question. I don't know what to do about this. I want an outcome that will truly be best for everybody. I don't know what that would look like, or if it's possible, or how to achieve it.
Uh-huh.
And then wait in meditation, because a message may come through, or you may be shown the answer to your question in some other way. I think our guides organize experiences so that when we need a certain piece of information, you know, we might read an article in a magazine that points us in the right direction, or overhear a conversation on the street that does that. I talk in the book about a woman who used to be a student of mine who wanted to move, to relocate away from Los Angeles, but she didn't know where to go, and so she was asking for guidance. And she began to notice that everywhere she went, people were talking about Santa Fe. And, you know, she would be thinking about her problem in a restaurant, and she would look up and see a poster for the Santa Fe Opera. Uh-huh. Or she would be thinking about it driving in her car and find that she was crossing Santa Fe Street.
Uh-huh.
And finally she said she was, this had gone on for weeks, and she was driving home from her job one night, and she said to her guide, you know, I kind of feel that you're trying to point me towards Santa Fe, but I'm afraid of making a really big mistake here, so you're going to have to show me the answer in a way that's really clear. And as an afterthought, she said, and remember that I'm a little nearsighted, so you're going to have to write big if it's going to be in written form. And so at that moment, she got stopped at a railroad crossing.
Oh, my goodness.
And here comes this long train pulling a whole string of cars, and emblazoned on the side of each one is Santa Fe.
Boy, ask and you shall receive, huh?
That's right. So I think we just have to really pay attention, expect an answer to our question, and if you're not hearing it in a verbal form, start looking around to see what the universe might be trying to show you.
Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking with Carolyn Miller. She's the author of Creating Miracles, and Creating Miracles can be found at online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and your local bookstores. And please go out and support this lady. She does some very, very good work. Carolyn, we've got about, I don't know, about four and a half minutes left. I want to touch a little bit on the scientific arena. You know, where my opinion is that the Earth is accelerating. Okay, time is changing. We're actually shifting dimensions,
mm-hmm.
and science seems to be coming along with that. What's your perception on the shift in scientific consciousness?
Well, I think a lot of people in science are shifting into a more open position, and part of that has to do with the discoveries that have been made in science over the last 100 years or so.
Uh-huh.
You know, with relativity and quantum mechanics and everything, people are realizing that the universe is not the way it appears to us walking around in it, and that there's a lot more going on here than we can imagine. And some scientists are even discovering a dimension that is, by definition, supernatural. It's outside the natural world, and it is not ruled by natural laws.
Uh-huh.
In that dimension, things happen instantaneously, and information is communicated throughout the universe instantaneously. So as scientists find these kinds of things, at least in some cases, I think it's opening them and the people who study with them up to the possibility that the mystical view of things that has been, you know, taught in cultures around the world sounds today a lot more like what scientists are saying, basically. So I think there's a lot more openness to it. On the other hand, I don't think science is ever going to prove the reality of supernatural phenomena like miracles. I don't think the tools exist to do that. It's a whole different framework. But what I recommend is that people perform personal experiments, because you or I can do the experiment of asking within for guidance or asking for help in a certain situation, and then seeing whether or not we are inspired to do something we would not otherwise have thought of doing.
Uh-huh.
That might work. We can see whether the situation takes a turn for the better that we can't even account for. And I think when people perform those experiments on a regular basis, it will convince them personally that miracles are real, because they'll know that they can rely on that.
Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Carolyn Miller. The book is called Creating Miracles. You do notice that CMCM thing going on, don't you? Okay.
Quite coincidental.
Yeah. But, and you can pick, the book is available anywhere, or if you've called in tonight, you get it absolutely free. Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for being my guest tonight. I truly appreciate it. We'll have to have you back sometime.
Oh, I love it. It's really fun. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I will be back next week with author Jean Slater. She's the author of Hiring the Heavens. If you'd like more information about any of my guests or to find out about my personal appearances, log on to either one of my websites, www.walkingwithspirit.net or www.healing-visions.com, or you can always give me a call at 888-240-6057. If you're stuck in your life right now and you're looking to make some changes, give me a call. I can help you unwind. Remember that the master knows that he or she is always a student, whereas the student still hopes to someday be a master. Many blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.